Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text number 24. Sri Narada Vacha Parado Pitatak Chakre Pitoryat Samprarikam Yataha Bhagavatan Rajan Abhishikto Dvijatibi. Sri Narada Vacha. Narada Muni said, Parada, Prahlad Maharaj, Api, also, Tata, in that way, Chakre, executed, Pitu, of his father, Yat, whatever, Samparayikam, ritualistic ceremonies performed after death. Yata, even as, Aha, order, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rajan, O King Yudhishthira, Abhishikta, he was enthroned in the kingdom. Dvijatibhi, by the Brahmanas present. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Narada Muni continued, thus the Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered Prahlad Maharaj. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead ordered, Prahlad Maharaj performed the ritualistic ceremonies for his father. O King Yudhisthira, he was then enthroned in the kingdom of Hiranyakashipu as directed by the Brahmanas. Purport. It is essential that society be divided into four groups of men. Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Here we see that although Prahlad was perfect in every respect, he nonetheless followed the instructions of the Brahmanas who performed the Vedic rituals. Therefore, in society, there must be a very intelligent class of leaders who are well-versed in the Vedic knowledge so that they can guide the entire populace to follow the Vedic principles, thus gradually become most perfect and eligible to go home, to return home back to Godhead. Sri Narada Vacha Parado Pitata Chakre Pitoryat Samparayikam Yataha Bhagavan Rajan Abhishikto Dvijatibhi. Namo Vishnupadaya. Oh, wait, translation. Sri Narada Muni continued, thus the Supreme Personality of God had ordered, Prahlad Maharaj performed, Sri Narada Muni continued, thus as the Supreme Personality of God had ordered, Prahlad Maharaj performed the ritualistic ceremonies for his father. O King Yudhisthira, he was then enthroned in the kingdom of Hiranyakashipu as directed by the Brahmanas. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna repeats two verses twice. Actually, he repeats another verse halfway twice, but completely twice. And they represent two aspects of our endeavor for perfection. One aspect is getting out of the material entanglement, and then the other is executing spiritual activities. Executing, maybe. Performing spiritual activities. Now, if we try to just perform spiritual activities and we don't understand how to get out of material life, then our spiritual activities don't come, they remain on the material platform. How can material activities remain on the spiritual on the material platform? Because our consciousness remains on the spiritual platform. The activity may be transcendental in the sense that it's authorized by Krishna, but we also have to have our consciousness in the proper place also. Therefore, anya bilasita shunyam jnana karma diravritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. There's ordinary devotional service, which has three aspects. It's for Krishna, it's anushilanam and anukulyanam. Anushilanam means it's following the direction of superior authorities. And anukulyena, it means that it's favorable towards Krishna. The consciousness is favorable. It's not only authorized, but it's favorable, and it's for Krishna. Now that's just ordinary devotional service, but anyabhilasita shunyam, there's no other desire than to serve Krishna, and jnana karma diravritam. And it's not performed in the consciousness of either furtive activities, mental speculation, or attempts of becoming materially powerful through mystic power. Now, as Krishna said in those two verses, Shreyan Swadamo Diguna Paradharma Sunustitat Shreydharme Dinadam Shreyak Paradharmo Bhayavaha. That it's better to perform one's own prescribed duty, even though imperfectly, than to follow someone else's duty, even though one may do it perfectly. Destruction in the course of one's own duty is better, because to follow someone else's duty is dangerous. In other words, we've come to the material world because we want to imitate Krishna. Imitation is the basic or the foundation for the material existence. Now, of course, we don't think we're imitating because our whole life is an imitation. So we think our imitation is not an imitation, it's reality. But it's just an imitation. Now, imitation what way? Is that because we think we're this body, we think we're doing so many activities, we think that we're controlling so many things, we think we're enjoying so many things, we have so many, it's all based upon the body. But actually, according to Bhagavad Gita, anadi dvam nirgunadvat paramatmayam avyam sharira stopi kuntiya na kuroti nana lipyate. That those who can see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is eternal, transcendental, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body, or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. So we're all transcendental. So that should be good news. Nothing that's going on in the material world is actually affecting us. Unfortunately, it does affect us. And because it affects us, therefore our desires have become distorted. Our desires mean we're just making the wrong choices, if we have a choice at all. Generally, most people don't have a choice. Or what the choice they have is either being in the mode of, very rarely in Kali Yuga they have a choice. The desire flows through their mind for something goodness. Even they think their desire is good, usually it's ignorant or passionate. They help a little old lady across the street. They think they've done something good. And she goes across the street and robs a bank. And so you've just assisted a bank robber. So that's the goodness. Or, of course, nowadays we know people are very charitable. They give away, you know, fried chicken to the poor or something. So the person who eats the chicken is going to become a chicken in the future. And the person who gives away, not only eats one chicken, but he gives away hundreds of chickens. So he's going to take hundreds of births as a chicken for all his good charity. But they think that this is goodness because they're in ignorance. Adharma, dharma itiya, mandite tamasavritaha, sarvatam viparitam sha, buddhisaparta tamasi. In the mode of ignorance, one thinks that religion is actually irreligion. And one thinks that actually irreligion, that's real religion. People have made religions out of eating. There are hundreds of books on eating. People study it, they follow it, they have their acharyas for eating. They meditate on it. They live for it. And of course, sleeping, that's even a higher taste. If you can sleep and dream that you've conquered the universe, then your dream was successful. You enjoyed conquering the universe in your dream. And when you wake up, then you can do the same thing. You can get a video game and dream that you've conquered the universe through the video game. And of course, sex life has become the standard. And then of course there's defending. If you can't defend yourself personally, then you learn how to become the fifth level in the Dark Knight's dungeon, killing dragons. You think, if now that I've learned how to use a sword on this internet game, certainly I can protect myself. So this has become, people are absorbed in the mode of ignorance, and they think it's good. I'm the best person because I reached number 7 on the level of kill the dragon. So I'm the best of them all. I'm the best of all mankind. So people have no idea what's to be done, what's not to be done, what's desirable, what's undesirable, what's binding, what's liberating. And therefore they always strive in the wrong direction. One has to get knowledge from the right source, and then one can choose the right desire, hopefully, by the good association. If you're in the wrong association, even the right desire is there, but you can't perform it because you're embarrassed, or there's too much social pressure, or people will criticize you for doing the right thing. So if you're in the wrong association, then even if you have the right idea, you won't be able to do it, and eventually you'll have to accept all the wrong ideas. And if you're in the right association and you have the wrong ideas, that's also not very good. So we have to be in the right association, get the right ideas, and then practice the right ideas, which means we practice accepting the desire, the intelligence that Krishna gives us to desire in the right way, so that we can become Krishna's instrument. Now, in the Veda culture, because people don't necessarily accept Krishna or want to surrender to Krishna, therefore Krishna has established Chatura Varnyam Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagashaha Tasya Kartaram Apimam Vidya Kartaram Avyam. He's established a culture called Varna Ashram, that everyone, whether they want to accept it or not, is under the influence of the three modes. People don't accept it because they're so absorbed in ignorance, they can't even conceive that they're not this body. What to speak of that they have a spiritual identity. But if there are actually people with vision, then they can organize society in such a way as that people perform sacrifice for Vishnu. Because ultimately, without performing sacrifice for Vishnu, Krishna says, one simply remains bound by the lower modes of material nature. One is forced to misidentify oneself with the gross and subtle body and suffer the threefold miseries. There's no alternative. It's not that, if I'd like to accept Vishnu, I can accept Vishnu. If I'd like to perform sacrifice for Vishnu, I'll do it. But it's one of the many alternatives. No, the alternative is either we want to become liberated from the material concept of life, or we want to remain in the material energy, always with the danger of sinking down to the lower species of life. Therefore, Krishna says, Jagnatat karma nyonyatra, lokayam karma vandanai, tarartam apikontiya mukta sangha samashara. That work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, it has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to the material nature. So if one does not understand Vishnu very well, or doesn't understand one's relation with Vishnu, still sacrifice for Vishnu is essential. And therefore, even if one is in the mode of ignorance, if he's guided by the higher persons in a higher realm, which practically doesn't exist anymore, but at least in the Vedic culture, there were persons who actually understood that the purpose of life was to serve Vishnu, and that there were rituals by which one could perform service to Vishnu, called Vedic rites or rituals. And that could be in the home, performing some Agnihotra, Yajna, whatever it is. Or in big, massive ceremonies where the Brahma, big yajnas, the Ashvamedha Yajna, the whatever the other yajnas are. And the priests would chant mantras because they were trained from their childhood how to perfectly chant the mantras. The right sacrifices would be made, and the demigods, and most importantly, Vishnu would be satisfied that his energies were being used for sacrifice. Now, sacrifice is necessary in the Vedic culture, but sacrifice ultimately was aimed at becoming Krishna conscious. In the age of Kali, people are engaged in meditation, in the age of Satya. Krite tad dharayato Vishnu, Tretayam yajito mukai, Dwarpayam parijaryam, Kalo tad dhari kirtana. So sacrifice, even Vedic sacrifice, even Brahman, Shudras, Vaishyas, and Shudras, was only introduced in Treta Yuga, Satya Yuga. People didn't need these four orders, although they may have been there, because we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, King Paribharichit. He was a king, so he was a Kshatriya, even in Satya Yuga. But the process of self-realization was to meditate directly on Vishnu. Therefore, sacrifice wasn't so necessary, because society may have been organized with some varna and ashram, but generally speaking, people would just directly, those who were qualified or interested would directly meditate on Krishna. But when Treta Yuga was introduced, because people became greedy, especially to gratify their tongue, and therefore some sacrifice. Sacrifice means you throw something into the fire and it disappears, goes up in smoke. So what's the value of that? Because it's being offered to Vishnu through the smoke. And it's Krishna's authorized way of offering these articles. Because they didn't throw just anything in. They threw in things that had some value, like ghee or gold or jewels. And these were offered to Vishnu. And he accepted it. Because through Krishna, it's not that he has anything to gain, that suddenly they threw some ghee into the fire and now he has something to eat. Krishna, there's nothing you can offer to Vishnu that he's going to gain anything, because he already owns everything. But it's the value of the offering. That's what he accepts. The attempt to please him by the offering, at least for the Brahmins, doing it as he wants you to do it. It may not be in the perfect consciousness, but at least it's following the direction, the proper direction. So the Shudras would assist, the Vaishyas would grow the ingredients for the sacrifice or obtain the ingredients. The Kshatriyas were arranged for the sacrifice, and the Brahmins would perform the sacrifice with the proper mantras, in the proper order, etc. And this way Krishna would be pleased. And when Krishna is pleased, the demigods were pleased, the rains would come on time, the air was pure, the water was pure, people's consciousness was pure, and one could understand, we got to get out of this material world, because even the best material existence is quite troublesome. But one can't understand that when one is so troubled that one doesn't have the intelligence to understand that one's in trouble. It takes some peace of mind to realize that we're in trouble. Now, in this age of Kali Yuga, people are not about to designate themselves as Vaishyas or Shudras or Brahmanas or Kshatriyas. There are none. There are only Shudras and a few Vaishyas. There's a whole lot of people being cheated and a few people cheating them. And they're all being cheated, actually. They don't know that the aim of life is liberation from the bodily concept of life. They want to become more absorbed in it. They don't know what religion is. They don't know what the laws of nature are. They don't know what cleanliness or truthfulness or mercy or austerity is. These things are considered to be, well, I don't even know if they even consider them anymore. They don't even think about them anymore. They don't even exist. They think cleanliness is washing your hands sometime in the week. They don't wash their hands after they use the toilet. They don't wash their hands before they eat or after they eat. They did a survey in England. They went around and took samples of all the different public places in England and found out that the whole place was covered with stool. What's that? Because people are, they have no idea, cleanliness, mercy. They think mercy is when I show mercy to my dog, everything else I can kill. Go out with a BB gun when they're young, shoot little birds, and they think they're a hero. Show how brave they are. Come back with a dead sparrow. See? I went out, brave the wilderness. So people are, even the animals don't usually kill for fun. So people have become less than animals. Therefore, in this age, we first introduce the chanting of the holy name. Because maybe by the chanting of the holy name, if people can hear it, if we can teach them how to take it seriously, then they may realize that, I may be doing something wrong here. I'm actually causing myself and other living entities problems. Maybe I should stop taking a hammer and hammering my finger with it all the time. I'm wondering why my finger hurts. Someone comes along and says, well, why don't you stop hammering your finger? Maybe it would feel better. Oh, you and your philosophy. Give me a good doctor. Bang, bang, bang. Doctor says, well, just hit it a little softer. Wow, you're really learned. Well, that's what 10 years of medical school does for you. So, therefore, the chanting is introduced so people can gain some intelligence. So they can understand things a little bit more clearly, and then they can stop their sinful activity. They can cease. At least they can become a bona fide Shudra by be able to hear some actually higher in knowledge and stop the things that are causing them so much misery. Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat-eating, mental speculation. They can gradually cease these things. Then they realize they actually feel a lot better. Then they can accept pious activities. They can accept devotional service, which is practically the only pious activity in this age, the chanting of the holy names. They can take it seriously and then learn tolerance of all of these impulses coming, saying, now that you become so pure, you deserve a little sense gratification, a little extra spice in your life. So to tolerate all the craziness that's in our mind, just lurking to capture us and sending us back into the darkest regions of hell. And if one can do that, then one can actually gradually understand that when I'm chanting Hare Krishna, there's no harm to pay some attention. My brain won't fizzle out if I pay some attention. To actually take the process seriously, become aloof from all our anxieties about past and future, and just listen happily to the holy name and about Krishna, try to understand and accept it, and then one can actually begin to experience what spiritual life is. But in the meantime, when we find out who we are, that we're Krishna's eternal servants, still we have a conditioned life. We should understand what our conditioned life is. We shouldn't try to act like a Brahmin when we're actually a Shudra. Like Kali, he dressed himself as a Kshatriya, but he was actually a Shudra. Which, you know, but that doesn't mean I become a Shudra and now I have a license for sense gratification. No, I'm a Shudra, I have a license for service. And that service is to help the Sankirtan movement, assist it. If I'm a Vaishya, I should supply the energies for the Sankirtan movement, the money or the paraphernalia. If I'm a Kshatriya, then if I'm an organizer, then I should try to help organize the Sankirtan movement. And if I'm a Brahmin, I should spread the Krishna's glories. I should preach about how Krishna is great and not think about how great a preacher I am. We should think about how great Krishna is and he can use me as an instrument to expand his glories. Then, externally we may act according to what may seem like the Varna and Ashram system, but actually we're just servants of the Sankirtan movement. Maybe in the future when we've captured society, when the Krishna consciousness movement captures some part of society, then people can be designated. They can have different occupational duties, all aimed at sacrifice for Vishnu. And by that sacrifice, the real necessity of life, anad bhavati bhutani, parjan, anasambhava. Then rain will come, and people can get proper food, proper air, proper water, and that's all they really need. They don't need all these machines and things like that. Machine doesn't make the food taste any better. You can't eat the machine either. There's no taste from a machine. You can't get a taste from your car. You can't eat your car. Some people eat, one person ate his car. But no, he ate a bicycle, actually. But this is not a very enjoyable way of spending one's life, eating a car. Better to eat nice prasadam, breathe nice air, have nice relationships with people. This is actually material happiness. And when one is materially satisfied, one can chant Hare Krishna happily and realize that compared to spiritual life, material life is quite dull, that I should try to improve my spiritual life and at the same time maintain in a comfortable way my material life so I don't become overly anxious about my material circumstance and I don't become overly anxious to get a better material circumstance because I realize that by my spiritual advancement, that's how I'm actually getting a better existence. Not by improving my material existence. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
So I was wondering, these reactions that we induce by our activities. For instance, you were saying how those persons will have to take the form of a chicken for many births. But every person has some pious activities also. So how do those
two... They'll take birth as a chicken in a nice place. Every person has pious activities. Can you name some pious activities people are doing?
I don't know. Maybe they help some fellow human being in
do what?
Difficult times. Or
to do what?
To give them food. Or
what kind of food are they giving them?
Or maybe they think, like, let this person become healthy. Or
to do what? They're assisting their sinful activities, that's all, Kali Yuga. They become healthy and then do even more sinful activities. So, I mean, the only pious activity in this age is chanting the holy name or doing the things that help assist in the chanting. Otherwise, it's all probably sinful activities. I mean, sinful activity ultimately is forgetfulness of Krishna. And thinking that we're the Lord of material nature. And therefore we're being impelled by lust, anger, greed, envy, and madness. Those are all manifestations of sinful activity. And now we have this sentimental vision of the world that there are nice people. Just like in the forest, there are animals like tigers and lions. They're considered to be bad animals. But the deer are considered nice animals. But after all, they're all animals. If a dog comes up and licks you, he's considered a pious animal. Anything else?
How to recognize that we are imitating something?
You don't have to just take it for granted. Our very material existence is imitation. The only time we stop imitating is when we accept that Krishna is the proprietor of everything. We accept that everything here is meant for his service. We find out from his representatives what he wants us to do, and we do it to please him. Only when we become Krishna's instrument do we stop imitating him. Other than that, our whole life is that, to different degrees of imitation. We're all following someone who's imitating someone who's imitating Krishna, that's all. We just don't realize how we're imitating. Everyone's trying to be the center of attention in the material world. Whatever they do, they think, oh, did someone appreciate it? Did someone see me? Did someone recognize me? Did someone see my body and recognize my bodily activities, which I believe are my activities, which is just an image, just I'm imagining that I'm Krishna, that I'm the center. I'm giving my love and accepting people's love for me, but it's actually for my body, which is just imitation. It's like having a puppet. Puppet's imitating, you know, a dinosaur. Oh, I'm a dinosaur. Actually, the puppet's not a dinosaur. So we're not this body. And these activities of this body are not actual real activities. Real activities are spiritual activities. Otherwise, they're just imitations of Krishna. Okay, anything else? Thank you very much. Gandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.